and good morning to everyone. I'll give you a little breakdown of the players here. First of all, Justice Wright will not be participating on any of today's cases. Justice Miller Lerman is somewhere on the interstate between Omaha and Lincoln at the moment. We hope she's going to be joining us later today, but she will be participating on briefs for the cases where she does not get here. And we are joined today by Judge Coburn from here in Lancaster County and Judge Sampson from up in Blair, and we really appreciate their participation with the court today. With that in mind, we will proceed with the first case of the day, in re interest of Kalen M. Mr. Shanahan, good morning to you, and you may approach and you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. Tim Shanahan on behalf of Kalen M. Your Honors, we're here today. The state had filed a petition for further review. Pretty much emphasizing words within the statute that was adjudicated, talking about one's incapability of appraising the nature of the conduct of another, and they use the terms right or wrong, and it's our position that the defendant either knew or should have known the incapability of a person to know or to appreciate or resist the nature of another's conduct does not equate with right or wrong. That's nowhere in the statute. It's our position that the incapability of appraising or resisting the nature of one's conduct, which is the specific language of the statute, has the right to have its plain meaning applied to it. Appraising means assessing. It doesn't say anything about wondering or knowing whether something is right or wrong. It's the victim being able to assess what is occurring, regardless of whether it's right or wrong. People can do many things that are that they certainly know what they're doing, and it can still be wrong. And we don't think, by the plain meaning of the statute, the state met its burden. Naturally, we agree with the ruling of the Court of Appeals.
What would the state have needed to do here in order to meet its burden?
Pardon me?
What would the state have needed to do here in order to meet its burden?
Well, there was talk of expert testimony. Certainly that would help. I don't think that's a requirement. I realize the state asserts my client knew or should have known that the victim was incapable of resisting or appraising the nature of the conduct, but it's a two-pronged part of the statute. Yes, I understand my client said he knew the victim was unable to appreciate right from wrong, but I think they also have the burden of producing some evidence that, in fact, the alleged victim was incapable of resisting or appraising the nature of the conduct.
What evidence was shown of DF's mental condition? Was there any evidence?
No. Excuse me, there was autism.
And how'd that evidence come in?
Pardon me?
How did that evidence come in? Did somebody testify to that? Was there a doctor? What information was received?
It came through the examiner, physical examiner. But I don't think there was any sufficient evidence to explain, number one, what autism is. It's true, there is a spectrum of autism. That was certainly not explained. I don't think, because of the fact that one has autism, that they, he or she, cannot automatically understand or appreciate what is occurring. And I stress what is occurring, because that's what they, what the legislature means by nature of his or her conduct, whether the person knew it was right or wrong. If they meant right or wrong, it's like the McNaughton, they would have been unable to appreciate the wrongfulness of their conduct at the time. It's our position in Deans to appraise, to assess what is transpiring, not whether it's right or wrong.
How should that be proved? What evidence should be shown to prove that? The ability to understand the, what's happening and having the ability to say yes or no to that activity.
Well, I think it's the state's burden to, how should they? I don't know. What I do know is they did. It could be through an expert witness, someone on autism, or, well, that would be preferable, but someone who can explain that this child wasn't able to appraise, be that due to age or autism. This certainly wasn't a case of physical incapability, because obviously hurt.
Counsel, does it matter whether the victim here, who was 13, was able to appraise the nature of the conduct? Would that equate then to consent?
Well, consent's not...
Could he ever consent, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Could he ever consent?
Yes, given his age.
Well, age isn't an element. Could it be relevant as far as a set of factors? I don't know. We don't have a set of factors here. We don't even have age.
What's the purpose of the statutory language that requires a showing that the victim wasn't able to apprise the nature of his or her conduct? What are we getting at there from a legal perspective?
Specifically, it's our contention that appraising is, if someone's incapable of appraising, they're not understanding what conduct is occurring as it's occurring.
And they can't consent.
I'm not saying that. Consent's not an issue. It's not an element. That's our position. You have any questions? Additional answer.
The Court of Appeals decision was driven, don't you feel, by the standard of review applicable to juvenile cases as distinguished from criminal cases in adult court?
I think it's certainly a different situation because they're not adults, but...
if this were a criminal case from adult court upon a conviction, we would view the evidence in the light most favorable to the state. Does that rule apply in juvenile court?
I believe so, yes. But okay. I think over and over and over this court has said we're not going to interpret words that have plain meaning and change the definition. And if you apply the plain meaning of the words chosen by the legislature, it does not say gay sex. It does not say right for wrong. It says appraisal, which by definition means being able to assess what is occurring, not whether it's right.
The focus of that element, though, is not on what the victim's mental condition was. It's on what the alleged perpetrator's knowledge or presumed knowledge was, correct?
I think they go together. The defendant...
Well, presumably, I suppose, you couldn't convict someone for having knowledge if the condition didn't exist. But the focus of the element is on what the alleged perpetrator knew or should have known. Isn't that right?
But I think there needs to be some evidence that there is an incapability of appraising. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question.
Thank you.
I think someone needs to state that the victim was unable to appraise, and I'm not equating appraising with right or wrong or consent. Otherwise, the legislature would have put those words in the statute, is my position.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is it Ms. Lemoyne? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Governor. May it please the Court, I'm Laura Lemoyne, Senior Certified Law Clerk, with and supervised by Tony Miranda, Deputy County Attorney of Federal County. I represent the state of Nebraska in this matter. And as you know, the issue before you today is whether or not the appellate court erred in reversing the juvenile court's findings that the state had proved beyond a reasonable doubt that Kaylin had committed first-degree sexual assault. That two-part analysis under 28 through 19.1b does involve a substantial mental or physical impairment on the part of the alleged victim. The Court of Appeals held that the evidence the state had did not show that Kaylin subjected the victim to sexual assault would be new or did not know, was unable to appraise the nature of the conduct. The Court of Appeals based that finding on the fact that the state didn't provide evidence on where the victim's autism fell on the spectrum of autism. Also on whether the victim, his autism would render him incapable of resisting or appraising the nature of the conduct.
Counsel, what standard of review was the Court of Appeals to apply?
It's a de novo review, and it's well established that on a claim of insufficiency of evidence, the appellate court cannot set aside a guilty verdict or if the verdict is supported by relevant evidence. They're not going to resolve conflicts in evidence or pass on the credibility of witnesses.
That's from our criminal cases. Do you have a citation using that proposition from a juvenile case?
In right interest, J.M. was one, where basically, even though it's a juvenile court, they still apply criminal standards for juveniles in making this determination. So the verdict is the same, is the evidence used in the light most favorable to the state was sufficient to support that verdict.
What evidence was shown here?
Well, the medical report did show that the victim had autism, but not exactly what the issue here. As pointed out earlier, the focus is on what the perpetrator knew or should have known at that time. That's the focus of that element. So, in addition to showing that the victim did have autism, Kalen also admitting to knowing that he had autism, admitted to knowing that the victim was, quote, mentally slower than where he should be, and that Kalen did not, or that the victim did not know right from wrong. But basically, quote was that, why would I do that? Because doing that would be corrupting him.
Does not knowing right from wrong equate naturally to not understanding sexual contact?
I would argue that it does. I understand the difference between, you know, appraising situations, but consent basically is knowing what you're doing and understanding and being able to make a decision based on all of those facts. And if you're unable to determine right from wrong, you're logically unable to fully appreciate the nature of the consequences.
Do you think this was charged under the correct subdivision of 28-319?
I do. I think that this statute, the purpose of it is to give extra protection to these victims who have a diminished mental capacity. You know, the whole purpose of the statute in the legislature. So,
could this victim have consented even without diminished mental capacity?
Technically, under case law, I don't believe it could have. Before that, the legal age of consent is 16, especially in this case when it doesn't
have. Is there a situation where, say, a 16-year-old, not someone over 19, where the age of consent deals with people over 19 and children 16 or under 16? But could a 16-year-old forcibly sexually assault a 12-year-old, or a 14-year-old, for that matter? So that consent is an issue?
Previous case law has held that consent was not an issue in this situation. Lack of consent under this particular statute, 1B subdivision, but would say, yes, technically that could occur just depending on the facts. There was another case where a 14-year-old had been charged and convicted with sexual assault in the first degree under this statute for sexually assaulting a 4- and 5-year-old. Basically, those kids were mentally and physically incapable of resisting. I would argue that that could occur based on the circumstances. I think it's a case-by-case basis. State v. Collins established that whether or not expert testimony is necessary or required depends entirely on whether or not the evidence is sufficient to justify a rational finding that the victim was mentally or physically incapable of committing the conduct. In this case, I would argue that the evidence was sufficient to justify a rational finding that the victim was mentally incapable of appraising the conduct.
Ms. Lemoyne, what do you think is the best evidence showing that?
I think that it's both Kalen saying his own admission that, and this is all at the time of the assault, he was aware that the victim was mentally slower, not where he should be, and his admission that doing such an act would be corrupting the victim. That establishes pretty clearly that he was aware of this victim.
So you're relying pretty heavily on a medical opinion, apparently, of a 13-year-old that's in middle school to make that assessment that somebody to the degree of the autism that this young man had was enough to make him incapable of resisting the conduct. Is that what you're saying?
Your Honor, I don't think that it's a medical in from him.
Okay. Other than that statement, then, what other medical substantive evidence is in the record to substantiate that?
Well, it is in the medical record that was put into evidence that he does have ADHD and but like I brought up earlier, the focus of this element is not on what the victim's mental state and where he falls on the autism spectrum. That's not the focus of the element. The focus is what Kalen was aware of at the time that he committed this act. And he admitted to knowing that the victim was mentally slower, did not know right from wrong, doing such a thing would be corrupting him. I think if we focus on that aspect of it, I don't know what else the state would have been required to do to prove that he was aware of that, other than by putting on expert testimony. And several cases have established that expert testimony is not required in order to prove the victim's inability to appraise the actor's conduct.
Which cases are those?
State versus Collins was probably the strongest case that gave...
Didn't that say it was a case-by-case determination?
Correct. It was a case-by-case determination where the court needs to look at the evidence and determine whether the non-expert testimony is enough to justify a rational finding that the victim was capable of appraising.
So it is somewhat important to understand what the condition of the victim is. Is that right? Is that what Collins tells us?
Well, Collins didn't really, basically they didn't look at, there was no expert testimony or no testimony at all based on what these victims, what their mental state was. They were college graduate girls. Basically, they just offered evidence as to what the grooming behaviors had been and the patterns, and the court took the assumption that those behaviors and what had happened to those girls was enough to render them physically or mentally incapable of previous conduct. So I think that what the state is asking the court to do here is a less significant leap, or not as strong of a, this case is much stronger, I think, showing that the victim was mentally incapable of appraising the conduct.
Did the SANE, the nurse that did the examination of the victim, did she render any opinion about his mental condition?
I don't think she did. I'm not sure whether she testified to the autism or was that just in the medical records.
Was there any suggestion from the medical evidence that it was difficult to communicate with the victim? Any trouble at all?
Based on the testimony from trial, I think that Kaylin definitely struggled just from my reading of the transcript, but there was no testimony from the doctor on whether or not she had a difficult time. In conclusion, no expert testimony should be required based on case law, and I think that the state proved and provided sufficient evidence that Kaylin was aware that the victim had a mental inability to appraise the nature of the conduct. And we ask that you reverse the Court of Appeals decision and affirm the juvenile court.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
No.
There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which